It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Yesterday night, the UK voted to exit the European Union. This news was met with volatile markets today and a concern for the future of Europe and the world. But how did we get here? As a Chicagoan who doesn't pay much attention to European politics and the history of said politics, I'll be honest about that. Is this something that experts have seen coming? Is this something that can be explained through reading the tea leaves and understanding the history of that area? And what's at stake beyond our 401ks and what happens to us here in Chicago? What is at stake with Britain leaving the EU? I know a guy who can help. Professor Charles Lipson teaches international politics at the University of Chicago. He's a regular here on WGN. Professor Lipson, good to see you.
Hello, hello, hello.
So let's start. I mean, basically, when I think about it, I think that I always known one thing, and that's that Britain didn't really want to be in the EU.
Right. Well, the EU was formed in the mid-1950s, and the real problem was how could we reintegrate Germany, which had fought a lot of wars against the rest of Europe? How could we reintegrate Germany into Europe? And when the EU was formed in the mid-50s, Britain decided not to join. And then when they decided they wanted to join, President Charles de Gaulle of France wouldn't let them in. Eventually, they did come in, and as they came in, they were a bit reluctant. I think what they like about the EU is they like the free trade. They think of it as a trading bloc. Mm-hmm. What's happened over time is that the EU has done two things. One is it's added more members. I think that's not a problem for Britain. The other is that it's become more and more bureaucratic. Just think of an EU run by a billion Lois Lerners. And there are things, I mean, it's so easy to find bizarre elements, but you can go to England and just like in America, you used to be able to buy a dozen eggs.
Sure.
You can't buy a dozen eggs in England. Why? Because they've decided you can only buy eggs by the kilo. So you have to buy them by weight now. There was literally a proposal to tell you how much a pickle could bend. If it bent too much, it was not a saleable pickle. And when we get beyond the ridiculous, anybody
who's
dealt with an American bureaucracy understands it. But the problem was these bureaucrats in Brussels were kind of unanswerable. And the way that elite professionals spoke about it, they talked about it as a democratic deficit. And the fact is, what was happening was that sovereignty was ebbing away. And I think, just as in America, you're beginning to see the problems. And there was an immigration problem.
We're going to get to immigration. But was that the goal of the EU when it was formed, to sort of make Europe one big sort of country, the idea that there'd be one sort of currency, that there'd be one measurement? Was that the idea when it was first founded?
No, that was not the idea when it was first founded. But as it evolved, they moved to a concept, and here's the quote, toward an ever closer union. And I think that there are some problems. They've kind of tried to jump halfway across that gully. And you can see one of the problems which came up over the last few years with Greece is that they developed a common currency, but not every country was in it. Britain made the decision not to get into the common currency, and that turned out to be a good decision. They kept the pound. But I think the question now, one of the questions is, if you divorce from the EU, what does that look like?
Right.
Because nobody's ever really done that. But I think some of the complaints are important complaints, and you kind of hear an echo of them in America. I don't mean to say that it's the same, but there's a kind of populist uprising against elites. There's a deep concern about inequality. You see that in Europe as well. There's a concern that the bureaucrats, not elected officials, are running things, and that the elected officials themselves are out of touch with ordinary voters.
Absolutely. And it's interesting, too, because that I mean, it automatically, or in a way, it creates an enemy or someone to sort of be that. And the EU became that for a lot of populace in England to say, this is the problem. This is why we're having these problems, whether it be immigration, whether it be just ease of life. It's because of this thing. Let's get out of it.
Let's make a distinction as you begin to open up markets to globalization. One thing is you, the United States, can sort of lower your tariff barriers and some of your rules that don't allow, let's say, steel or cars come in from Japan or whatever. The next thing you can do is you can begin to cooperate with Canada and Mexico, and you can open up some of your internal borders, but Canada has its own external tariffs and rules about the outside world. The next stage, which is what Europe had gone to 20, 30 years ago, is you set one large border around the whole group for tariffs and so forth. But that doesn't mean if you're from Mexico or Canada, you can immediately move to Chicago. What the EU then did is it moved beyond that to say if you lived in Poland, you could move just without any permission. Just like in America, you can move from Mississippi, as I did, to Chicago.
Right.
You can move from Poland to England. The problem is that system, which allows people to move around, is as porous as the weakest border. So as soon as somebody comes in from North Africa, the problem wasn't Polish plumbers in London. The problem was as soon as somebody came in from Syria into the Balkans, or they came from North Africa and got into Italy, the next thing you
they
knew,
could go anywhere
they were
want.
Anywhere they wanted
well,
to
we
be.
Saw that to be a problem, what happened in as sort of like charting the terrorism that happened in Paris, that they weren't Parisian, they weren't French, they were from somewhere else. But it's easy to move because you're right. They essentially became one country.
That's exactly right. And what you have beyond terrorism is something that we haven't seen in the United States. In the United States, when people come, at least by the second generation, they're learning English, they're beginning to fit in. We do have some groups, the Somalis in Minneapolis area, where the second generation is not fitting in. But what looks to be the case in Europe is that the groups are large enough.
Muslims from Africa
are now 10% of the French population. You're getting local groups that are fearful. Gays, for example. Women who wear an open-cut jacket. They're really at risk. And people are saying, wait a minute, how is this something that I voted for as being part of the EU?
We're talking about, obviously, Brexit, what happened yesterday with the UK voting to exit the European Union with Charles Lipson. He is he's a professor of politics, international politics at the University of Chicago, regular here on WGN. We'll take a break. We'll come back and see what's next. Are we going to see just the end of the EU as we know it? And what does that mean for European politics? Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. We're talking about the UK exit from the European Union. I don't know why. I don't want to say Brexit. I feel like that's I don't know. There's something about it that I'm really stumbling on when that word comes up.
With J-Lo. Weeks of therapy, yeah. You can get over it.
Charles Lipson's in studio. He's a professor of international politics. He teaches it at the University of Chicago. He's a regular here on WGN. Let's talk about what this means for the EU without the UK. Does this mean that France and Germany, we're seeing it already with Scotland, sort of go the same route and say, yeah, we don't want to be part of the EU as well.
I think that one of the things, and you're seeing it in the market, is introduce a huge amount of uncertainty. I think the key to the EU has always been the French-German partnership. And I think that what you'll see is those two getting together. Item two, I think you'll see them punish the Brits. And that won't just be kind of revenge. They, if there's no penalty for moving then out, yeah, then everybody takes it, right? the exit train. The third thing you'll see is a rethinking. They'll be blaming Britain. This is the voters are morons, blah, blah, blah. That's what elites always do. But you'll begin to see people thinking, does this mean we should have a kind of EU-lite membership tier where you can join, where you can join, be part of the trade thing. But
you can be at a leadership level, or you can be in the middle level, yeah, you can be an entry level.
Exactly, like I donate to all those things. By the way, you may have seen around town some of the multi-million dollar gifts, and some of them are called anonymous. I don't want to say that's me. But you know, but I do like to make
you don't
gifts.
Like to brag,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
right,
exactly. Right.
But I mean, you know, I was just thinking, we were talking with Pete about this again. I kind of come from this from a layman standpoint. I don't know a lot about European political history, but the one thing I do know is that France and Britain, they've kind of been at each other for centuries. Is this sort of the beginning of another chapter of that kind of history?
But so have France and Germany. I think that if you wanted to think, how could something really bad come out of this? You would say that it could be a meltdown of some of the post-World War II arrangements. We still live in a post-World War II arrangement. And the great genius of what happened is that with a U.S. pacifier, the Brits, the French, and the Germans, groups that have always been at each other's throats, have formed a peaceful relationship. I don't think that will change. But I think, and in particular, I think that what the Germans decided is they answered the question, how can we get rich without getting scary? And their answer to that was, we can get rich without being scary if we stick to Europe like Velcro, rather than developing an autonomous polity where we have our own military, which will inevitably scare both the Russians and the French and the British, and then you see a coalition against them. I think the Germans don't want that to happen. It won't happen, but they have to figure out a way to bring the EU together. Now, a key part of this was that the U.S. played a pacifying role. And what you see now is a lot of voices in the U.S. saying, hey, let's pull back ourselves.
So I'm fascinated by this because I'm interested in what Russia it thinks of all this, because they're just kind of, I haven't heard much about Russia responding to this. They're just on the, and they've always sort of had this adversarial relationship with the EU or with you know, just the Western countries. Do they see this as an advantage that Britain has left the EU?
The Russians see this as a total advantage. The Russians want to send a wedge into the EU. They were not just scared about NATO moving into the Ukraine. Yeah. They were scared about the Ukraine joining the EU. That was actually what pushed them over the edge. So they were perfectly happy to see floods of Syrian refugees moving in and that tearing apart the EU. They're happy to see the EU at each other's throats. Remember, the EU is actually closely related to NATO because all the key members are part of NATO. So this is all to the good for Vladimir Putin.
All right, so let's ask the golden question, which is, how does this affect the United States politically when we think about an election year with Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump? You know, Barack Obama was really pushing, you know, putting passion behind the idea of staying with the EU. It didn't happen. There's been a lot made that the voters resemble the same kind of voters that would vote for Donald Trump. What's the takeaway you in the U.S. politically?
I think there are two arrows, and they're pointing in different directions. The arrow pointing toward, we don't want as much globalism, we want more national control, we want to pull back from some of these international commitments. That's what happened in the Brexit vote. That's exactly the themes in Trump's campaign. The immigration issues also look similar, even though there are substantial differences. Pushing in the other direction, and that's what everybody's emphasized today, they haven't emphasized a counter arrow that's worth thinking about. The more uncertain things are, the more people look to a kind of familiar leader. And that's what Hillary will say. She'll say, boy, there's a lot of uncertainty. Boy, you look, as soon as Donald Trump lands in Scotland, down, right, he puts his foot in his mouth, that sort of thing. Do you want to pile more uncertainty on? My hunch is that the nationalist dimension will be more important. If, however, Britain goes into a serious recession right away, which is a possibility, and begins to pay a price for this right away, then she will add to that claim, see, you might like giving a giant finger to the political establishment, but just know you're going to pay a huge price, and I can save you from that, yeah. Me, Hillary.
Well, it's interesting. We'll see how it plays out. I'm sure we'll talk with Chris and Dave on Touche about that on Monday. Professor Charles Lipson, he teaches international politics at the University of Chicago. He's a regular here on WGN. Thanks so much for coming in and talking about this. We appreciate
Absolutely. It. Absolutely. My pleasure.